Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Leprosy. You probably have heard of this disease, but have you heard of Wolfram syndrome or ALS? If not, it may be because these are rare diseases. There are about 7,000 types of rare diseases in the world, and 350 million people suffer from a rare disease globally. And 5% of rare conditions are treatable. Experts say a rare disease is any disease that affects a small percentage of the population. Most rare diseases are genetic and are present throughout a person's entire life, even if symptoms do not immediately appear. On the show today, we will discuss rare diseases. And joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Chika Dunyo, Director of Education Programs with the U.S. National Organization for Rare Disorders. Chika, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lenore. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you join us. Also joining us from Dakar, Senegal, is Fatmata Wourie. She is a patient of a rare disease and is joining us today to share her experience and her story to enlighten us about what someone who lives with rare disease may be going through. Fatmata, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Lenore. How are you?
Good, good. How is everything in Dakar?
Oh, well, so I don't live in Dakar. I actually live in the D.C. area.
Yes.
And my family originates from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Okay. So where are you currently joining us from?
I'm currently joining you all from Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So never mind. I was told that you were joining us from Dakar. I don't know why, but well, thanks for joining us from Washington, D.C.
You're welcome.
Great. I think they just misheard you. That's all.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay, so ladies, let's get right into it. Rare diseases. I mean, in the beginning of my introduction, I touched on what a rare disease is, what characterizes actually a rare disease. There are over 7,000, there are about 7,000 types of rare diseases. Chika, let me start with you. What can you tell us about rare diseases that the average person may not know?
Sure. So as you mentioned, and you introduced the topic so well at the start of the program, rare diseases often affect a very small population. In the United States, a rare disease is defined as one that affects less than 200,000 people. But the definition of a rare disease differs by country. I think what you can say about all rare diseases, regardless of the country, is that it affects a small population. Many times diagnosis is difficult because so little is known about the rare disease. Treatments are often very difficult to access or to even find. And not a lot of research is often done on many of the rare diseases that exist. Another thing that we often see is that populations that are affected are so spread apart, especially if the rare disease is in a bigger country. You know, many people don't see another patient with that particular disease. So the internet and the influence of the internet has really, really changed that for a lot of rare disease communities. But those are many of the things that you see in many of the populations across the world.
Okay. And Fatmata, you suffer from a condition that is considered a rare disease. What is the condition?
So the condition that I suffer from is called Stargardt's disease, which causes a loss of central vision over time. So you never really completely lose your vision, but you will be considered one of the many people who suffer from low vision.
So did the expert tell you how you were susceptible of developing this condition? Is it in your family, maybe genetically?
So they're saying it's considered a hereditary disease, but
okay.
I think the funny thing about it is that even though it is hereditary, I do go to the National Eye Institute at the National Institute of Health every 6 months to do genetic testing. So they've done genetic testing on me twice, and I'm going through my third round of genetic testing. So they have found a gene in me that's called the ABCA4 gene that does cause vision loss, and it's similar to Stargardt's disease. So for my case, it's very special because my doctors have coined it as Stargardt's disease. But the thing about it is that I had the gene, but the phases of how my vision loss has gone, it's kind of outside of the standard of Stargardt's.
Wow, okay. Wow. Chika, talk to us about, let me have your reaction to, first of all, what Famara said in terms of, you know, she's able to go to experts to get more testing and everything, but access to treatment, to even diagnosis, is a problem with rare diseases, right?
Exactly. You know, as I mentioned, because there are so many rare diseases and so little is known about many of them, many people with rare diseases often go through a long diagnostic odyssey. And, you know, we're lucky here in the United States that we have many, you know, institutions that offer great care. But imagine being in a country that doesn't have a strong healthcare system, and, you know, the opportunities for access are challenged. The diagnostic odyssey is that much more difficult and can take that much more longer. We're very lucky here in D.C. that we have access to NIH and other great healthcare institutions, but you know, it's a challenge all over the world for people to get access, and even in the middle of the country, you know, in the Midwest of this country, people have few institutions that they can access for good care and great specialists to improve their access to diagnostic tools and that kind of thing. So I'm not surprised to hear about Famara's journey, and it's great that she is seeing physicians at NIH because it's an amazing facility, as we all know.
And you are very familiar with rare diseases, not only because you work with the National Organization for Rare Disorders, but even prior to that, it is because your journey started because of your sister. She suffered from a rare condition. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Sure. So I, my sister Carolyn and I are 2 years apart, and I always say two peas in a pod. We grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. My parents are from Ghana. And we shared the same room. We shared the same bed for way too long. We really, really grew up together, and so we were best friends. And around 21, 22, she started suffering from symptoms that she would go back and forth to the doctor for. She had a cough that wouldn't go away. Eventually, she started suffering from pain in her chest. Eventually, she started having challenges breathing, and so she was diagnosed with asthma initially. She was given treatment for that. That didn't help. Eventually, her breathing became more labored, and then she was diagnosed with something called vocal cord dysfunction. After a bit of time with that diagnosis, I think it was clear that she needed, a more in-depth examination of her breathing issues. And so they did surgery, and when they opened up her throat, they realized that she didn't have any cartilage there, that all the cartilage that holds the trachea open was gone, and that her trachea basically collapsed on itself. And that's when they realized she had a rare autoimmune disease called relapsing polychondritis, which is a disease where your body attacks your own cartilage. And if you can imagine, you have cartilage in your ears and in your nose and your joints and in your throat. And so she was immediately given a tracheostomy tube, and she lived with that for the rest of her life. But that caused its own challenges. She was no longer able to work. She was put on an immunosuppressant therapy treatment. Once she wasn't able to work, she had difficulty accessing insurance. She couldn't afford COBRA. She was on it for a few months and then could no longer afford it. And then, you know, her journey started with trying to access health care without insurance.
Yes.
So that was a challenge for her, and that, you know, that affected her health in the long run.
Wow. I'm really sorry to hear that. And and this leads me to you, Famata. What was your journey to diagnosis like? I mean, it's just for me very surprising that Chika's sister had to go through all these different steps before she was finally properly diagnosed, being in the United States. And you also live in the United States. What was your journey like to diagnosis? Famata, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. Talk to us about how challenging, or maybe not, it was for you to be diagnosed.
So I think the most challenging part was being at the age of 19, because at 19, that's when I lost my vision. And just really being at that prime of your life where you graduated high school, you're about to start college, and then you're losing your vision. So I think that's the biggest challenge, is just really accepting that you're losing your vision and how it really does alter your life and what you're going to do. And you really end up rethinking and redirecting what you're going to do in life, because every day you have to figure out ways to accommodate your vision and what will be, and having people actually accommodate your vision for you as well.
So what type of adjustments have you had to make?
One of the adjustments I've had to make is really finding, I guess, organizations that will provide me with accommodations, like large printouts, computers where I can be able to change the size of what I'm seeing on the screen, and just making sure that I'm in areas where I can easily identify where the bathroom is, where water fountains are, kind of just finding ways just to accommodate my everyday living.
Okay. Yes. I can imagine it must have been very, very challenging to go from being, you know, fully capacitated with your vision and having to adjust that as an adult. Ladies, we will take a short break now and come back to continue the discussion. So stick around, and we'll have more on rare diseases today on the program. But first, the news with Bonsa Tufa.
Thank you, Lenore. Tuesday, researchers are presenting to a conference the second known case of a person who shows no sign of HIV. This happened after undergoing a stem cell transplant and halting the use of antiretroviral drugs. The study published in the journal Nature describes the man as being free of the human immunodeficiency virus for 18 months since stopping the typical drug treatment that can suppress the virus but not cure the patients. The man, who wishes to remain anonymous, was diagnosed with HIV in 2003 and began taking the antiretroviral drugs in 2012. After developing Hodgkin's lymphoma, he began stem cell transplants in 2016, then discontinued the antiretroviral drugs. Researchers who monitored his viral loads have found no trace of HIV since. The lead author of the study, Ravindra Gupta, says the key to the stem cell treatment is the use of cells from a donor with a rare double copy of a gene mutation that is naturally resistant to HIV. Human rights advocates are calling for an end to the discrimination that denies rights to children with disabilities. Rights include an equal education and other opportunities available to other children in society. The UN Human Rights Council held a special session in Geneva on the empowerment of children with disabilities. In keeping with the theme, the UN made the council chamber wheelchair accessible, hired a sign interpreter for the hearing impaired, and embossed some oral statements in Braille. The UN says children with disabilities will be able to lead a full and fulfilling life on par with other children if certain adaptations are made for their needs. However, the United Nations reports the sad reality that over 90 million children with disabilities around the world are likely to have their rights violated from the moment they are born. It says millions of these children are torn from their families and placed in institutions where they are at risk of violence, abuse, and neglect. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is rare diseases. Joining us via phone is Chika Dunyo, Director of Education Programs with the U.S. National Organization for Rare Disorders, and Fatma Bourier. She is joining us from Washington, D.C., and is sharing her journey as a patient of rare disease. So, Chika, let me come to you and talk to us about the work of the National Organization for Rare Disorders. How is the organization able to, first of all, identify people who are suffering from a rare disease, and then following that, what kind of services do they provide?
Sure. So we rely heavily on the NIH. The NIH has an office for rare disease research, and they do quite a bit of work to identify and locate new rare diseases. So we rely heavily on their lead as the office that defines a rare disease. And as you mentioned, there are 7,000 rare diseases. What NOR does is we support the rare disease community, and we have a number of different programs. We offer education. I work in the Educational Initiatives Department. So we have educational reports, webinars, videos. We have educational conferences that we offer the rare disease community. We also have a research program. I mentioned on the television program the other day that we have a natural history registry platform. So as I mentioned, the rare disease community, many of the disease communities are very, very small. And so collecting enough data on those particular communities can be challenging. And so we offer a platform where the different disease states can enter in patient information so that over time, when we collect that data, we can use that data to further research and develop new therapies. We also have a grants program, so we encourage researchers to do research on particular rare diseases by offering research grants. We have a very robust policy program. They do work nationally and at the state level to inform policies that reflect the needs of our patients. We also have a patient services program. Through that program, we support the different rare disease communities by offering access to free drugs and therapies. We offer copay assistance. We offer travel and lodging assistance for clinical trials. So, you know, we try and do as much as we can to help the rare disease community. And our organization is growing, and we're developing new programs to support our patients.
Quite a bit there that NORD is doing. That's good to hear. Now, Fatmata, in your case, talk to us about your experience as an African woman suffering from a rare disease. Talk to us about the community experience, maybe the cultural experience. How aware are people in the community about, even if it's not your condition, but the fact that there are people who suffer from conditions that are not that widespread?
So the thing, I guess, with the community, I feel like it's still being learned about, because I feel like not too many people really know about these visual diseases that do happen to a number of, African and African-Americans. And so I think the community, I'm trying to grow that community of bringing awareness through my blog, through my social media, to show people that, hey, look, I am an African woman with a disability. These are the things that I can do. Like, my vision doesn't limit me. And so I think by bringing that awareness through my social media and my blog allows people to really see and understand, mm-hmm. and allows me to be able to say, like, hey, I can offer you advice or tell you my story so you can understand, because you may come across someone who has the same story, is going through the same condition, or may, you know, suffer from vision problems. And me, by me providing those resources, saying that, like, this is what you can do. These are the contacts that you can reach out to, and taking those necessary steps.
That's very important there. And Chika, talk to us about the African diaspora community, even in Africa, because the work that you do through the organization has perhaps some a model there that could be replicated in other countries, whether it's in Africa or other countries around the world. What are some of the models or programs that you think that could be an example that will help African countries as they try to deal with rare diseases?
Sure. You know, I think that there are challenges for the rare disease community that are similar across the globe, which is access to early diagnosis, effective treatments, and access to good medical care. And so that is going to be exacerbated in countries back home. So, you know, I think what's important is to identify people at home who are very passionate about this cause and who have really strong talent. You know, you want great marketers, you want great grant writers, because the work that needs to be done requires people that have those skill sets. I think that, you know, as far as the model, you know, every country is different, and so it's going to be difficult to replicate the model. But I think identifying strong people, partnering with organizations globally, you know, there are great rare disease organizations in South Africa, in Ghana, back home, my country, in Kenya. And so we're seeing them getting really engaged internationally. And so I think that partnering with other organizations globally, not only to learn, but to work together so that the cause and the mission is extended beyond just the borders of one particular country, is going to be important as well.
Very good point. And Famata, why do you choose to share your story? I know that information is key, it's important, but why would you like people to know what you're suffering from? You talked about social media earlier, how you are raising your voice on social media.
I think for me, it is actually just finding others to connect with as well. And why it's important for me to share my story on social media is because my story to myself is rather interesting, and that journey that I've been going through for the past 10 years is interesting. And so people just reading it and learning more about it makes them want to learn more about me and makes people want to learn more about rare diseases.
Okay. And Chika, one thing that we didn't really clearly mention is the fact that, unfortunately, your sister passed away. So when you speak about her, and you think about the journey, what she went through, what would you like people to know about, whether it's her life or even the work that you're doing now as it relates to your sister's legacy?
Sure. And I hope I don't get emotional, but my sister was a vibrant young woman, and she was just at the start of her life. And, you know, the work that I'm doing now is to continue to uplift her memory and to continue to honor her memory. You know, I got into the rare disease career, my rare disease career, a couple years ago, and it was a career change for me. I worked in marketing in the publishing field for almost 15 years before I decided that I wanted to commit my career to continuing to raise awareness for rare diseases. And so, you know, I really, really feel strongly about this mission. And I think that, you know, the size of the rare disease community and the challenges that our community faces affects way more people than beyond the rare disease community itself. You have to imagine the families that are affected and also the research that is going to be done within the rare disease space has implications for other diseases because many of our diseases are genetic in nature. So I think that you know, it behooves a lot of us to really have more interest in what's being done in this space. And because so many people are affected by rare diseases, it's not unlikely that one day you will run across someone you know that has a rare disease. So it's important.
Okay. And Famata, as a rare disease patient, what are your hopes? What would you like to see in the future?
In the future, I think I would like to see them find a cure for the visual disease that I have, but I think most importantly and personally, really give my disease a name. Because even though it's coined with a medical name at this moment, like I said, I go to NIH for more and more research because, like, they still do not know exactly what I have. I may have a gene that does cause my vision loss, uh-huh, but my visual disease does not have a name yet.
Oh, okay. That's interesting, if I don't, for lack of a better word, no name for your disease. So are you one of the first patients to develop it, or it's just that they have not given it any name as of yet?
So I think for them, they just haven't given it a name yet, because it's just very similar to Stargardt's, but it could be something different.
Okay.
Actually, to that point, you know, many rare, we keep saying 7,000 rare diseases, but, you know, every year more and more rare diseases are newly discovered as technology improves, and as the internet becomes the place where people kind of reach out to others to say, you know, my son was, you know, seen at this institution, and this is what his disease appears to be. Are there any other families out there that are hearing the same thing? And so we are seeing communities of people discover other people online with their particular disease, and that spurs, you know, other research to be done, and many diseases finally get a name through that kind of connection.
That's a good point. So, ladies, we barely have 30 seconds. I want to get from you a quick message before we wrap the show. And I'm going to start with you, Famata. A quick message.
Yeah. So a quick message from me is that don't allow your disability to set limitations for yourself, and that no matter what it is, you can do whatever you put your mind to.
Okay. And Chika, what's your message?
Sure. My message is Nord's message, which is, you know, alone we are rare, together we are strong. Each rare disease is rare, but, you know, if we work together, I think we can accomplish a lot. And I want the community to know that Nord is a resource for you, and we're here to support you. And so feel free to reach out on our website, rarediseases.org.
Chika, Famata, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we thank our guest, Chika Dunyo, with the National Organization for Rare Disorders, and Famata Worie, who was kind enough to share her story as a rare disease patient. For more on today's topic, log on to our website at voanews.com or keep the conversation going on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Bonsa Tufa and our engineer, Pete Henley. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. There is a general strike today in Sudan.